Scott McKay is away this week. Instead, we're joined by Ted Nesi from WPRI TV Channel 12. Thanks for joining us, Ted.
Thanks, Ian.
Speaker Mattiello, the General Assembly ended its final session of 2016 after sunrise last Saturday. You say it was not the plan to go all night and that this will not happen again. How would you explain to people who don't study politics like me and Ted why the legislature begins meeting in January, ends in June? Why does it have to go so late at night for the final session?
Well, I don't know that it has to. I think it's like cramming for an exam. You never plan on doing that, but ultimately most people cram for an exam is my best explanation. Early on, things stop moving through the committee process. We usually hold hearings, listen to the public, get testimony, and then analyze it later. That's why we hold bills for further study initially. Then we analyze them. We have conversations with the committee members, our chairs, our leadership team, and we make determinations of which bills we want to consider on the House floor. That inevitably has to happen later when you culminate your discussions with the other chamber, in this case the Senate. You sit down and you start negotiating for the night. I actually sat down with both leaders. I said, look, it's 10:30. I'm concerned it's going to be too late. Should we go forward or should we call it quits and do this over 2 or 3 days? What I heard from everybody was, in fact, no, everybody wants to be done. Let's get it done tonight. Once we went down a road, it was just it was slow going. I didn't want to be there, and that's not going to happen again.
You say that's not going to happen again. Can you pledge it will not go past a certain hour next year?
I can pledge, because what I'm going to plan next year is, at a certain time, we just call it quits. Everyone will be on notice. We got till a certain time relatively early, and if we're not making substantial progress at that point, you have to quit. If you remember last year when we were moving too slowly, I pulled the plug. I quite frankly didn't want to do that 2 years in a row. So once we committed, once we got beyond the point of no return, I felt I was in a no-win situation. I acknowledge it was too late. It's not going to happen again. Next year, without substantial progress much earlier, we're just coming back. It's simple as that.
We've heard the big fight at the end behind the scenes was the parole reforms, the criminal justice reforms, and career technical education. Was that the bills that were really fight at the end?
Those are some of the bills at the end. Quite frankly, the judicial sentencing reforms were never an issue that I was very excited about either way. I know other people had an interest in them. I just did not. I did have an interest in the career tech bill. I went up to Worcester. I see what they do in Massachusetts. They have a model that's great. And for some reason, Rhode Island doesn't want to emulate a model that's great. We had a bill in that would have, in fact, created a council that emulates that model. We have a council now. It just has no authority, and RIDE totally ignores it. So that was a very important bill, I thought, for our students. But not everybody agreed with me. That was not something that held us up at all. Those were just some of the final issues that we considered. We called it quits at that point. We were negotiating and working on routine bills far too late. The going was far too slow. And at the end, those two bills just fell off the table because one side or another didn't like the other set of bills or wasn't interested in them. So I would say that's not what made us go late.
Governor Raimondo calls that justice reinvestment package of bills a way to improve public safety while reducing costs. Why are you lukewarm or not necessarily a supporter of that legislation?
I understand there was a commission that worked on them. I'm not a big fan of some of those commissions. I think they're result-oriented. Being a practicing attorney for a lot of years, I have skepticism that they would work. I know that there's an agenda nationally to get them done, and Rhode Island's always a test market for these national agendas. And I think our judicial system works the way it is. In fact, the Supreme Court just enacted some new rules where some of those initiatives are adopted. And I think the court is best suited to make those particular determinations, not a national agenda or a national movement.
To pull back a little bit, there are 62 Democrats in the 75-member House of Representatives, 32 Democrats in the 38-member State Senate. Is it a negative for Rhode Island that Democrats have such dominance of the legislature?
No, I think you have to look at the work we do. And if you look at the work of the General Assembly of the Rhode Island government in the last several years, it's been exemplary. Our policies are good. We're moving the state in the right direction. I think folks are happy with the work we do. But don't misconstrue that. I know that there are issues that folks aren't happy with. They're not happy with some of the problems that some of our members have had. And those are things that I'm also concerned about. And by the way, every member of my chamber is very concerned about that because most people are hardworking.
The governor vetoed the revenge porn bill this week. She might veto more bills. She was cagey with reporters about that. How and when will you decide whether to call your members back for a potential override votes, if any?
Well, we'll see what she does in total, and then we'll take a look. And decision will be, do we bring everybody back for an override, or do we just address them, repass them early next session, and then override the veto while we're still in session if she, again, does that. Quite frankly, I don't understand that. We did what other states are doing. I know there's special interest that always brings up a lot of concerns. There's no perfect bill. These bills were written about as good as you can write them. And we listened to the same folks she listened to, and we chose not to accept their concerns. Because at the end of the day, when you write legislation, there's no perfect way to write it.
In the years before you became Speaker in 2014, there had been some news reports about how Representative Ray Gallison had had part of his salary paid for through legislative grants. Considering that, why did you choose Gallison to be your finance chairman?
Well, I did not believe that he was getting paid out of those legislative grants. Those concerns were brought up, I think, the year I was running. So I heard that there was an issue. My understanding, right or wrong, was that he, in fact, was not getting paid out of those grants and that those grants were going to other purposes. And I believe I might have been wrong in my understanding. It's not something I ever looked at or studied. That was just my understanding at the time. We took action to make sure that that'll never happen again.
Just a quick follow-up there. You and Senate President Paiva Weed did eliminate the community service grants and put the executive office in charge of that. But you and the Senate President remain in control of the legislative grant process. Why not make an effort to take the politics out of that, perhaps by dividing those grants by legislative say of districts?
See, so everybody says that you maintain them some way, they just have a better way of doing it. I think you have to have a set of eyes on it. Right now, it's the Speaker and the Senate President. You know, members come up with ideas that are not so good sometimes. So you need a second. That's not political. You need a set of eyes. I would never advocate for just giving blank checks to folks to do whatever they want with. Right now, you have the members, you have the Senate President and the Speaker looking at them for the respective chambers. There is a second set of eyes. It's not political. I have never rejected a grant unless it's somehow inappropriate. And usually we talk to them and explain what the concerns are, and they say, oh yeah, I'm glad you thought of that. I suspect I'm not going to be approving them for Republicans because they took it on for an issue, so Republican districts just aren't going to get grants. Not because I'm not going to give them, they're not going to ask for them. I have never refused for either a Democrat or a Republican a grant request. They're not political. All I am is a second set of eyes.
You're running for re-election, and if you win, you'll seek the speakership, presumably get it again. So if you're back in this job in 2017, I know you'll say jobs in the economy, but any more detail on priorities for next year, things you'd really like to dig into?
You'll see more of the same. I have three budgets, so I'm very predictable. We'll try to take care. The budget's the most important thing for me legislatively. I'll try to take care of the middle class with some tax relief. We'll try to take care of businesses with some tax relief and regulatory relief. We'll try to make the lives of Rhode Islanders better. If you look at the beach fees that we cut in half this year, that's a way to celebrate what Rhode Island is so proud of. And that's one of my most proud accomplishments, as small as it might be, because that's a way for Rhode Islanders to appreciate and be proud of what we're proud of, what defines us. And those are the types of things that I'm going to continue to work on, improve the quality of life, improve the economy, make jobs more plentiful for Rhode Islanders.
We are out of time, and thanks for joining us. Ted Nesi from WPRI TV, Channel 12.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And the Speaker of the Rhode Island House, Nicholas Mattiello, Democrat of Cranston.
Thank you, Ian. Always a pleasure.